Welcome to the M&A Zing, the show for acquisition entrepreneurs, search funders, and holdco builders across the UK and Europe. Each week, we dive into the real-world stories, strategies, and challenges behind buying and building small businesses. So whether you're searching for your first deal or you're already running a growing group of companies, this is the place to be. This week, we're back with an ever-popular buy-side breakdown, and I am, as ever, joined by my green-fingered co-host, Gareth Hawkins.
Light-fingered, I've been called. It's been a pretty exciting start to the year. Here we are, early Feb. January was full of news of various searchers achieving great things. A couple of shout-outs, I guess, before we get stuck into the main event today. Congrats to Emma Margetts and Scott Winship, who have got EMSCO Partners off the ground. I know they were working on it through 2025. We met up with them at the Serial Acquirer Symposium. They're launched, they're funded. They've got all the good and the great on their cap table. Orca, Ambit, Fonzeo, Miramar, plus a few family offices. Nice. These guys are incredibly backable. I think they've exited two startups in the past. They've grown some fintechs between them. So, really great to see them off to the races. And then at the other end of the spectrum, in terms of the, you know, with EMSCO starting their search, Ash Ravi and Novus have got their next acquisition under their belt. They're really flying. So they've got recently acquired Trade Door, which is a UK garage door manufacturer and access control equipment co. So, they've got a few under their belt. So congrats to them. If any of our listeners want some shout outs as to emerging funds or successful acquisitions, drop us a line.
Yes, we love a success story. Excellent. Congrats to both. Well, we're going to start today's buy-side breakdown with a little bit of a hot topic. So landscaping. So across Europe and indeed here in the UK, landscaping is consolidating fast. So private equity platforms are working through a £7.2 billion UK market, but it's still sort of highly fragmented. So the two major players are Nurture Group and Idverde, I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly. Between them, they have over 100 acquisitions, equaling £500 million in combined revenue. But the top 50 players only hold about 20% of the market. So there's still a lot to play for. 60% of the owners in this market are over 55, and 80% of those, as always, lack succession plans. So deal flow surging. Quite an exciting proposition, Gareth.
Yes, lots of excitement, both sides of the Atlantic and actually across Europe on consolidating this space. You've mentioned a couple of the big players there. Acquisition entrepreneurs coming out with their AI-powered roll-ups have also started targeting this space, albeit at the smaller end. But the avatars to sort of emulate are, as you mentioned there, Nurtured Group. Nurture, incredibly tall flag and very, very active in their acquisitions over the last few years. I mean, they're doing almost quarterly, if not slightly more frequently, acquisitions in growing out their platform. There's a lovely circularity story behind Nurture because Peter Fain, who is leading it, has been in the game for 40 years. He founded Waterers in 1983, sold that in 2003 to ISS, one of the big FM companies, but then bought it back from ISS when it had become Tivoli Group, carved it out from them just in the last 18 months after having built Nurture through a series of acquisitions. Tivoli was the icing on the cake because it absolutely supercharged the sort of value of the business at the top end, anyway, top line. So yeah, they've done, prior to that, they've done Hortec, they've done Chris Wood and Toms, Space Care, there's been loads that's going on. Interestingly, though, if you look at the 2025 accounts, you have to steel yourself because the business is doing about 118 million in revenue, but making a 9.1 mil operating loss. It's got 16 mil annual cost of interest and the finance that it's taken in order to fund these acquisitions. Long term, it's got about 170 million in creditors and lenders beyond 1 year. So clearly a lot of repayment to do, but they managed to declare a 5 million adjusted EBITDA. So even in 120 mil revenue businesses, you still have an adjusted EBITDA to shout about. So that's good to know. But yeah, really interesting business, and obviously have set the trend for what others want to do. You've got the Swedes doing it with the Green Landscaping Group, which is pushed out across some parts of Northern Europe, as well as obviously the Nordics. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Idverd, which is everywhere.
Yeah.
And has TCL, which is their subsidiary in the UK, Simon Cashmore. Yeah, massive operation. BGF backed before they obviously exited to Idverd. Idverd totals over 800 million euros in group revenue,
wow.
Employs 8,000 people. Present in France and Germany and Denmark and the Netherlands, including and obviously here in the UK. So you've got these really great platforms, you know, well-backed buy and build operations. However, it's leaving a lot of the sort of lower market unconsolidated. These guys are picking up businesses that are doing, you know, 20 mil plus in revenue each, but there's a huge base of the pyramid that's doing, you know, sub 10 mil revenue as like these regional players.
Yeah, well, like I said, 80% of that of the market is still sort of largely untapped, so there's a ton of great companies out there. In fact, we did a short search early, didn't we, and found a couple of off-market. I know that we're going to talk about some on-market deals that we found, but we found a couple of good off-market companies, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We you know, it's they're out there. They've all got their sort of local authority contracts, going around doing grounds maintenance, everything from bin emptying and lawn mowing through to, you know, arboriculture, tree care. Yeah. I mean, you know, the beauty of this is it's evergreen, literally, no pun intended. You know,
very good.
It's beautifully recurring revenue operation. You know, these businesses are citing upwards of 50, 60% of their revenue as being contractual recurring. And of course, these bloody plants, they just keep growing. It's the ultimate business in that sense.
You would think it's quite a seasonal thing. But I guess if you look at specialities like arboriculture, you know, if you need a tree cutting down, you need a tree cutting down. It doesn't matter what time of year it is. So I suppose if you have those specialities and then you have the kind of recurring government contracts, then you can keep it, as you say, sort of evergreen revenue coming through, which is awesome. And I suppose then perhaps have less leaning on contractors and have more sort of perm staff, which kind of reduces a bit of risk as well. So yeah, interesting stuff.
Yeah, with the brain drain, the sort of skilled shortage that we find in every hands-on market, yes, there, it is vital that you have PAYE'd staff, but then you've got to make sure that you don't have seasonality, that you've got constant work for them all the year through, or that you make sufficient in the boom summer, spring, early autumn to see you through the fallow winter.
Yeah. Well, this is one thing I thought... Sorry to interrupt you. One thing I thought was really interesting about Nurture, because I was doing a bit of digging on them earlier, and it says that they have 95% plus direct employment, so no subcontractors, with a living wage commitment. So they've got, you know, 170 plus UK depots, all fully staffed by directly employed staff at a living wage, which I think is super impressive.
Yeah, well, two things onto that. One, the more staff you have, arguably the greater the capacity for the business to grow and serve more clients.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can hit a glass ceiling if you don't have the manpower. But two, how to corner the market? Well, in an environment where trade is a premium and skills are, you know, becoming ever more scarce, own the skills if you own the market.
Yeah, buy up all the staff and nobody else can have them.
Yeah, you just got to make sure you've got enough work for them. But
the Beers Diamond approach.
Nice analogy. Yeah. Yeah, so we thought we'd take a look and see what we could find off-market and on-market. So instead of having a single buy-side breakdown today, we've got a couple of deals in this space to have a look at. Looking for green flags as well as red and amber ones. But just by way of the sort of medium-sized business that is... you know, out there still to be rolled up. You've got, I won't name names, but you've got one based here in the southeast that also serves with depots down into Hampshire and Surrey and Oxfordshire. They're doing 30 mil in rev, making about $1 million in operating profit declared. So yeah, they're looking pretty tasty. Great coverage, lots of local authority contracts. You've got one in the East Midlands that's doing 25 mil, similar sort of footprint, lots of capital plant in terms of, you know, mowers and trucks and various different things, and chainsaws probably are plenty. So yeah, you've got some pretty high asset value businesses here making some decent money off of some pretty regular consistent turnover. Tend to find that the lower down you go, the more net profitability in terms of percentages you're finding. So there must be some inhibition at scale here in terms of you know, the health and safety obligations and, you know, all of the breadth of infrastructure that you need in order to support these larger kind of corporate businesses. I guess also if you want to tender for government contracts and retain them, you've got to have some pretty robust back office.
Yeah, and I, you know, on one of these, the listings that we're going to go through today, there's a couple of sort of accreditations and certifications that I've never heard of before. And yeah, I'm guessing that in order to take those government contracts, you probably need some of those. And that's where that sort of barrier comes from.
Yep, yep. I mean, and you also have maintenance. You'll have lots of your own internal maintenance. I know some of these big boys have, you know, rented premises all over where they park up, you know, compounds and depots, but also repair workshops and all of the things that go with that to really sweat the assets and make sure that they're keeping the stuff working. And a lot of these guys, you know, look to recycle their cash into plant and own the stuff outright and, you know, less likely to lease products, to lease equipment, and pretend to. So yeah, all of that's really useful considerations, but I think there's a real kind of untapped profit center, if you will, in that kind of sub 10 million company that is ripe for consolidation. You could strip out some duplicated, you know, back office stuff. You could consolidate things like the health and safety and the risk management and the compliance pieces. Yeah, and we found a few of those, both off market and a couple here that we'll go through that are on market. So should we get stuck into those?
Yes. So the first on market deal that we found is on the Intelligent platform. And they are a leading specialist in front garden design, restoration and creation for period properties based in Southeast England. So you think about your sort of acres and acres of period sort of Victorian and Georgian properties you see all over London. These are the guys to go to.
Indeed, yeah. Firstly, love the Intelligent platform. Mark and his team do a nice job. They've sort of managed to strike a good balance between a sort of supportive kind of traditional brokerage business, but with some decent tech that makes it accessible for businesses to list themselves. So congrats to them. And yeah, this interesting little business based in South London seems to be well tapped into the kind of affluent London market, with folks that own, you know, mostly townhouses, I guess, that want to do conversions to, you know, feature frontages. So it seems to be a bit of a landscaping, but mostly a small construction project type operation. Owner operated. The founder seems to go back quite some time, been in the game. When did they incorporate? 2013, and he seems to have been going as an operator for, you know, probably a good 5 or 6 years prior to that. But yeah, really great reputation, but making some decent profitability in a percentage terms, obviously from a small start. These guys are doing just over $1 million, is that right, Alfie? In revenue?
Yeah, just about that.
Million in revenue, making a couple of hundred grand in net profit as a consequence. Notice that if you scrutinize their company accounts for 25, they managed to grow their cash balance by about 170k and grow their shareholder reserves by 130k. So that would take into consideration both of those, you know, after tax, after dividends. So it speaks to that healthy 200k plus EBITDA. So you've got to ask yourself, if you can run a company of that size and make over 20% in net, you know, earnings, not a bad little number for an acquisition entrepreneur that likes to spend some time outside.
No, absolutely. And if it is the company that that we think it is. They've got a couple of very interesting propositions. You know, they talk about how they can help you with planning permission and conservation area restriction concerns, which is obviously super important, and, you know, restoring to a sympathetic level. When you think about all of the money that is spent on, you know, converting lofts and doing up these houses, and, you know, as an area in London gets gentrified, all these kind of rows and rows of houses get some work done, and, you know, the millions spent. I wonder, though, how many of those jobs add up to $1 million in revenue. I mean, I'm not sure what the, you know, they kind of charge per job, but, you know, what kind of volume do you think he needs to be getting to get to that turnover?
Yeah, this is the thing, isn't it? I doubt they're doing hundreds of projects a year. It's probably, you know, less than 100 projects a year. You know, the sort of value that they'd be going out at, in that sort of area, kind of affluent London, seems to have some examples of going, pushing into Mayfair and Knightsbridge and Kensington and places like that. So, you know, obviously some fairly high value properties, reasonably broad frontages. So you could find that they're doing, you know, a couple of projects a month and still making up this, you know, healthy profitability on a 1 million revenue. Is it scalable? Probably not.
I wouldn't say so. I mean, again, I think that this is probably quite a London-centric business. I'm not to say there aren't other sort of wealthy city hubs in the UK that have a kind of fair share of period properties, but I think you could kind of run out of those in a Manchester or a Leeds or a Liverpool sort of fairly quickly. And I think that scaling outside of London would be difficult.
Yes, and obviously all the manpower seems to be based down here in sort of the sort of Surrey neck of the woods, I think. Yeah, it is very regionally specific, regionally anchored. Note that the listing doesn't talk about being able to relocate. It's not a relocatable business. And so, yes, I think they've got a particular niche in a particular area. What, you know, their Google reviews are great. They're, you know, they're up for 4.5 stars. I think they carved themselves out a really nice space, really unique offer in the area. So great for them. But yeah, if they haven't already scaled, I wonder if there is enough demand to scale with and enough skilled labor to scale with, because they do some very ornate things by the looks of it.
Yeah, and I think my other concern with this would be how much of this is founder-centric, because the founder of this company looks like he's an incredibly knowledgeable guy, you know, and he talks about his, you know, passion for this and his, you know, understanding of the history and, like I said, the conservation areas. And, you know, if they are working that small number of projects per year, I would imagine that he is probably the person striking up these relationships and selling these deals and talking to the homeowners. And if you take him out of the equation, how long does it last? That would be my question.
Well, this is always the challenge of this sort of size of business, isn't it, really? And that would probably come through in whatever deal structure eventually gets agreed for, sure, for this seller, because there is a big concentration risk, I imagine. The listing doesn't speak about, you know, other commercial staff. It talks about, you know, skilled laborers, skilled artisans, but it doesn't necessarily talk about, yeah, who would do the commercial stuff, going out and winning the clients and designing the jobs and making sure that things are profitable, maintain the level of profitability they have, mm-hmm, if the seller is off to do other things or looking to retire. So there is a, I would say, a huge concentration risk in a business of this size. So yeah, one to think about. Probably needs a long transition, needs a heavy dose of deferred consideration, probably doesn't attract a high percentage of the deal value cash down on the day, but it gives the owner an exit option, and hopefully someone to pass the baton to. I think anyone coming in should be under no illusion, though, that they're going to have to roll their sleeves up. You know, they've got to be doing replacing the owner. And this is the thing at this level: owner operators are having to exit to owner operators. Mm-hmm. So if you're a spreadsheet jockey coming in expecting to buy this sort of business as a you know, profit generator, cash generator, and not have to be in it operating it, I think you might be in for a surprise.
Well, that leads on to my next question, which was, you know, who do you think buys this and does a good job with it? Like, is it something that if you're already a landscaping company, you could acquire this as well, and it could give you access to a London market. You know, one of your staff can learn from the owner, and maybe you can also get in to do some back garden work with them and, you know, expand with the customer base that he has. I mean, that's where I would probably see this work.
Exactly that. So I see somebody based in you know, Surrey, Hampshire, Kent, Essex, Hertfordshire, like, you know, M25 surrounding area, that has a good, healthy business in the burbs, but wants access to the London market. Also wants to diversify a little bit, you know, move out of the sort of horticulture piece that as a concentration and into a bit of more, you know, kind of harder FM works and harder projects. Mm-hmm. So it will have the right fit for someone. Someone will have an appetite for it. But yes, it's very niche, and just at that, you know, level of financial viability that still attracts some existential risk.
Well said. So as we've got the two of these in this episode, are we doing a sort of thumbs up, thumbs
down? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, for me personally, it would be a thumbs down, because I would not know where to start with this. I can just about keep my houseplants in my office alive. I know nothing about conservation areas. It wouldn't work for me. So sadly, it would be a thumbs down. But for the right person, I can absolutely see this being a really great buy.
Yeah, exactly that. I'm really surprised, though, on your foliage in the back of your background there, because when you're saying about keeping it alive, I actually thought that was artificial interior foliage. So,
Well, this one is artificial, but this one's real.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
I thought you had succumbed to the Plantaria group. They're another one of these that are in the ascendancy, buying up. I think they've done 9 acquisitions, green team interiors, office landscapes. It was reminiscent for me when I was researching for this episode. Obviously, we know Seb Willen, who bought Vista Folia, a cracking deal with a lot of seller finance. And he must be thinking about his exit opportunities. I wonder if he's got his eye on Plantaria in the future.
Well, anyway, I get them when they're new, and then after a couple of months, if they don't survive very well, they go and live in Biz's office, and I kind of get the next one. That's how our situation works. This one's not real, because finding a trailing plant that stays sort of lush and green all year round is difficult. So yeah, it's a 50-50 split.
Hey, well, you're showing your horticultural knowledge here.
How about you? Is it a thumb up or a thumbs down for you, Gareth?
It is a thumbs down for me, because I think it will attract a disproportionate owner concentration risk with the seller. I feel like, you know, this might just be me being jaded, but you might spend a lot of time negotiating this only to find that the seller wants out sooner than you need them to be. So.
Potentially, yeah. Yeah, I could see that happening.
Yeah. So on the other end of the playbook, we've got an interesting second deal to talk about today, which is a specialist grounds maintenance, arboriculture and landscaping service provider based in the Midlands. In researching this one, I got all excited, I've got to say. So do you want to give us a bit of the lowdown?
Yes, so this one is listed by our friends at KBS, and it's on UK Businesses for Sale. So the kind of company blurb says that their company's complete services are delivered for clients of all sites, ranging from small gardens and sports pitches to large-scale development areas. So open space maintenance, site clearances, plot landscaping, arboriculture, horticulture. And it goes back to what we were saying earlier, is kind of having that spread of different skills is probably what allows them to not get too caught up in sort of lumpy seasonality stuff. Maintain the sports pitches over, you know, the football season over the winter is probably helping them out. In that terms, arboriculture, you know, so site clearances, and they've got a real sort of mixed pot of stuff that they get into. Turnover, it says from 1 to 5 mil here, which is not a very helpful scale. That's quite a big spread. But we think we might know who it is.
Yeah, and I think further in the listing, they're talking about $1.25 million turnover. What impressed me about that, though, is that they're also reporting an adjusted EBITDA of $450,000 off of that $1.25 million. So, you know, up over the 22% net margin. that got me very excited.
Well, and that's interesting because they look like they are kind of at the scale level where we said things potentially get more expensive. You know, they are accredited by CHAS and SMAS WorkSafe. I don't know either of those. CQMS registered, but they've got some great sounding accreditations, and it seems like they work on, you know, large scale developments and with sporting teams and with councils and stuff. So they've surpassed that barrier, and they're still, you know, turning over, getting a 450k EBITDA at 1.26 mil turnover is incredible.
Exactly. Yeah, those accreditations are CHAS and SMAS. By the way,
and SMAS.
Yeah, CHAS and SMAS. Yeah, not too dissimilar from the East End piano duo, Rabbit.
I don't think those two would get accredited these days.
Are they still even with us? I don't know. I mean, God help me if I've spoken ill of them. So
in that old East End, yeah.
Indeed, Chaz and Dave, gosh. So yeah, these guys do have Chaz and Spaz, which is a good sort of sign of their focus on health and safety. You know, a lot of this is going to be chainsaw wielding work, and you know, it's important that they have a clean health and safety record, mm-hmm. which I'm sure they do. I'm more interested in their clean books and their a highly profitable model, because they're making a considerable earnings from you know, quite a modest turnover, which might account for the size of their team. If I look at the company that I think it is, mm-hmm. they've got a veritable army. I don't know if they're listing some subcontractors in amongst all this, but they've got a healthy number of headshots, and they're obviously actively recruiting as well. So these guys are over in the West Mids. Seem to come out of a rather large Staffordshire estate, and seem to have some nice local authority contracts, as you've alluded to, a huge asset base, £600,000 worth of combined fixed and current assets, of which the cash accounts for, I think, 150 of that. So let's say 450 to half a million in fixed assets. So they've obviously got some decent plant on the books, even at those written down values. So yeah, they're up for sale. Seem to cite that they've got some strong second tier management team. Looking at the incorporation and the ownership, seems to be guys kind of looking for early retirement. It's been going since 2004, incorporated in 2006, which actually also aligns with the listing. So yeah, I think it looks like a nice company, good reputation, decent contracts, cites that 65% of its turnover is recurring contractual.
Yeah.
Exciting. Rub hands. Yeah. Very exciting recurring revenue. Everybody loves recurring revenue in this game.
Yeah. Well, it also, and this is really interesting for this listing, because we don't often see this, you know, on the listings on UK businesses for sale. Strong second tier management team, including an employee who can absorb financial duties currently undertaken by the shareholders. So it shows that they've kind of already thought about their kind of saleability and you know, how someone could come in and take over this business, which is something we talk to sellers about, you know, quite regularly, is are you prepared to hand the reins over to someone? They're kind of already thinking about de-risking the acquisition, which I like.
Well, it says to me that the sellers have actively been de-risking, or at least trying to make the businesses less dependent on them from an operational standpoint. You know, you actually could bring in a spreadsheet jockey that wants to run this sort of financially remotely, because you've got the operational management in there that's already doing the day-to-day by the looks of it. So that feels, even though the turnovers are comparable, I would say this one has obviously greater profitability, but more longevity and transferability, sure. as a consequence of the efforts they put into making sure they've got a robust team.
Yes. So for all our sort of spreadsheet jockeys out there, as we keep affectionately calling them, you know, and that's what I would be in a business like this. I'm not a green fingered person. I don't have any deep knowledge of this, but it does seem like you could come in and take this business over, and there is enough going on there that it could run without too much operational input from you. And, you know, even sort of on the financial side, which is super interesting, because that's something that a spreadsheet jockey would only come in and do for you. But the fact that they've already got someone who can take that over is even more interesting.
Yeah, I like it. And if you were looking for a platform regionally to be able to bolt on other businesses too, in the, you know, estate services, estate management, soft FM kind of stuff. This represents, I think, a good sort of business in the ascendancy that you could use as a bit of a platform. So I think it's worthy of further exploration, frankly. So if you want to do the thumbs up?
If you want to be the next Nurture, you could kind of buy this and it could be your springboard into, you know, this, or sell into Nurture for potentially. Well,
so if eventually these platforms, these consolidators are going to run out of decent sized businesses that they can be buying and adding on.
Sure.
And so there needs to be, you know, the movement of acquisition entrepreneurship and owner operators looking at these kind of size of businesses in the kind of, you know, few million revenue, decent profitability. The cash generative nature of this business would make it a good initial platform, but albeit as a smaller start, more affordable, you know, more accessible start, I guess, for someone coming in at it from search.
Yeah.
Yes, fast forward 5, 7, 10 years and you probably got something of a size. You know, maybe it's, you know, you've cleared the senior, you've cleared the seller, you've thrown off some cash that you've put into a war chest, you've got some lending, you maybe have got 2 or 3 acquisitions done within the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then you might be off to the races. You could be looking at, you know, north of 10 mil in combined revenue. You could be looking at, you know, 1.5 mil in profitability, net. But I think those kind of numbers make it attractive. That's where these Nurtureds and, you know, Green Landscaping and Itaverda and people are probably starting to look. That's your entry level.
And what's the sort of multiple that you get on that sort of, you know, after this arbitrage and you've had your couple of bolt-ons and it's been your 10 years, what sort of multiple are you looking at from your 10 mil revenue?
Yeah, I mean, at a 10 mil, you've got to be talking 5 to 7x, I would have thought.
Awesome.
But you're buying in to these smaller companies at no more than 3, realistically.
Yeah.
So there is a multiple arbitrage game to play here, definitely.
Well, there you go, any listeners out there. This could be, like, is this the next hot market? You know, we're sick of care homes. Bets have already been and gone. Is landscaping the new frontier?
Well, it's exhibiting some strong growth.
Okay, that's a very political answer.
yes, no, I was going for a pun, actually.
Oh, I missed that. Sorry.
I'm all about the dad jokes. Hmm. Don't you worry. So yes, I'm thumbs up on this one. I think this one excites me. I'd want to know more. This is one to pull the sim on, definitely.
You were so excited then. You didn't even ask me to give you a thumbs up or thumbs down. You couldn't wait to get the thumbs up out there.
No, you know me. I've got no poker face. how about you, Alfie?
Yeah, I'm absolutely the same. This would be a really exciting one. Like we were saying, this could be a super exciting sort of launch pad into growing a sort of small group and doing some bolt-ons and selling off down the line. I think you could come into this as a spreadsheet jockey that doesn't know a huge amount about the space and learn over time. And yeah, big thumbs up for me. Maybe we should buy this one, Gareth. We're both very excited about it.
Yeah, it's halfway between both of us as well, with you in Manchester and me just outside of London. There we go. Why not buy something in the West Mids and go and drive tractors all day?
That actually sounds like quite a lot of fun.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, awesome.
The commune next door and, you know.
If there isn't a next episode of the pod, you know what's happened.
Indeed, yes. You know, you're where to find us.
Yeah, on a tractor somewhere in the West Midlands.
Yeah.
Well, I think we'll leave it there. That was a really interesting episode. We kind of covered a hot topic. We gave you a bit of background and we looked into two deals. Unless you've got anything else to add before we sign off this week, Gareth?
No, absolutely not. I think we've got an exciting year coming up and more great interviews, some already in the can, some scheduled over the coming weeks. So stay tuned. Well, here we are, a year in, season 3 already, wow. Pushing at 50 episodes, I think, in the horizon. So yeah, thanks to all our listeners and a growing number of followers and viewers that bother to tune in and listen to us debating the merits of these opportunities.
Yes, and when you do see us and speak to us, please do keep giving us your feedback on what you like about the episode. So I've been increasingly meeting people in BizCrunch demos that say, oh, I listen to your show and I particularly like this style of episode or that style of episode, or I've got that one bookmarked to go back to. And so yeah, I really love that feedback. So yes, apart from when somebody came up to you and said they love the episodes where we tear down businesses, that's not what we're doing here.
I think they use more pejorative language than that, actually, which made me feel very guilty. But ultimately, we try and do this in good faith and not name businesses and help fledgling acquirers to navigate the space and know what to look for and what to avoid. So,
And as you've seen today, if it's a good listing and a good business, we will be overwhelmingly positive. So I think we're firm but fair. I would say that's firm but fair.
There we are. That's going above the door.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in. Stay tuned for next week. We've got a very exciting interview for you. And until next time, keep on crunching.